Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Get 2020 Vision.
My name is Gemma Milne. I'm a science and technology journalist. And in this series, I'm going to be chatting to and learning from a number of the brightest minds in technology and business. We're going to be acting as a sounding board to help people just like you make informed decisions on the next steps in your careers.
The reason I started this podcast with QE was to provide clarity for people on the cusp of making important career, skill, development decisions. So if you have any questions about any of those decisions that you want answered, please send them on to get2020vision@qe.com, or you can get us on all of the social medias using the hashtag get2020vision. In this first episode, bearing in mind it is National Apprenticeship Week, we're going to focus on the theme of parental preconceptions. So we're going to focus on parents. They're a group of influencers who often get overlooked despite their proximity to those about to take their next step. With such a wide variety of career and qualification routes available, it's no surprise that many parents don't feel equipped enough to provide high quality career guidance. Then, when you add that many jobs might become redundant through AI, robotics, automation, computerization, deciding the next career steps for many young people becomes even more daunting. This episode is designed to help both parents and young career seekers in getting the right advice that will secure them on the right path. And how am I going to do this? Well, I'm going to invite three guests onto the show to tell us all about breaking the stigma surrounding alternatives to university. So, welcome to the show, degree apprentice Amar Rai.
So my name is Amar Rai and I'm a systems engineer at Cisco.
His mum, Bhupinder.
Hi, I'm Bhupinder Rai, and I'm a police superintendent with Thames Valley Police, and I'm also Amar's mum.
And tech guru, Dev Gonsai.
Hi, my name's Dev. I'm the head of courseware at QA.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming and joining us.
Cheers.
Very welcome.
Awesome. So before we get into questioning you a bit more specifically, guys, we're going to have a bit of an icebreaker question. And I'm going to start with you, Dev.
Excellent.
We're going to ask everyone, what did you want to be when you were younger?
I wanted to be a musician.
Oh.
Yeah. So when I was younger, I was very much into singing. Wasn't very good at it, but I tried. So that was probably the most I could ask.
Are you going to give us a demo here?
Absolutely not. No, not even a little bit. I remember when I was at my school talent show in year six, I sang a Green Day song that had a few bad words in it.
Oh.
Got kicked off the stage for it. And from there, I was like, maybe music's not the way to go after that. So.
And that's probably not to do with your voice and more to do with your anarchy using sweary words at primary
yeah,
school.
Yeah, that's probably not ideal. But
okay, musician, Bhupinder, I'd like to know what you wanted to be when you grew up.
Oh gosh, certainly not what I am now. I actually wanted to be a lawyer, a barrister.
Mm.
So I was never really, policing was never even on the agenda. I became a police officer, I would normally say by accident. I wasn't really expecting to get into policing when I applied. So I grew up in a very traditional family where being a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer was probably the kind of way that we all went.
But you're still kind of in that space of justice, right? I mean, if you're interested in law, policing, I would kind of say they're sort of two sides
yeah,
of the same sort of coin.
They are, but it's very, very different on the policing side to the court side. It is we supply the court with what they need and we do all the kind of pre-work. But I definitely think policing is much more exciting than being a lawyer.
Okay, so you've won then. You're in the better place then.
I definitely am.
Amar, what about you?
So I was typical little boy. I wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up.
Same, snap.
So yeah, and actually for quite a long time, I ended up going to air cadets and saying I'm going to learn how to fly and get into the RAF and go from there and be an astronaut. I had a whole plan worked out in my head about what I was going to do. And then I started talking to different pilots and stuff like that about how much time they spend away from home and those kind of things. So I kind of pushed that to one side and was like, so it's still interesting looking at those kind of things, but a typical little boy of either being a footballer or being an astronaut when I grew up.
Mm.
So not massively complicated from an early age.
That was similar to me. And it's funny you said that about going and wanting to be in, you know, be in the air cadets and asking questions. You know, I was like, OK, do I go into, you know, the RAF and do all those hours, or do I become a, you know, private pilot to get all of the hours, or do I move to America and become a citizen and eventually try and, because there's like only three routes, right, to be an astronaut. So I was the same as you, looking up all these different ways and realising in the end it probably wasn't quite for me.
Yeah, that was the same for me. Is there's very slim chances of maybe becoming an astronaut and very few people do it. But yeah, up until I was maybe even 12, 13, 14, that was still something that I wanted to do.
It was funny. I kind of didn't actually come to the astronaut thing until I was a bit older. So I felt like I was being more serious because it was when I was 15, I was like, I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm interested in space. Whereas when I was younger, I wanted to train dolphins. I was obsessed with dolphins.
To train dolphins? Yeah. How do you get in that profession? How does that work?
I mean, I've no clue how you actually enter the profession because I went off dolphins at probably age, I don't know, 11.
Did you spend any time with dolphins before you decided that's
yes,
what you
we
to
went
do?
To Disney World in Florida or was it California we went to? I don't remember. Anyway, there's a picture of me holding a dolphin when I'm like quite young and I just look absolutely elated and that's how I was feeling at the time. I was like, I want
this
to
is
train dolphins.
Do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was completely obsessed. But I think it's an interesting discussion, though, because a lot of time we do have these, you know, what did you want to be when you grow up? And I don't actually think most people have only one answer to it. It's funny how y'all kind of only give one answer. Yeah. I sort of changed my mind so many times, both in terms of age, but also in terms of, you know, as Amar said, research. And
sometimes you start something and it isn't what you want and you don't feel fully fulfilled by what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's the same for all ages. I mean, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I still feel like I'm not grown up yet. Maybe probably everyone feels like that to some degree. But especially nowadays, and I think this is something I'd love to touch on a bit more in this discussion, is it does feel a little bit different now from maybe, say, 30, 40 years ago, where the sort of traditional thing was to go into one job, start at the bottom, work your way up,
absolutely,
or
yeah.
pick a profession. Yeah. You know, you mentioned, Bhupinder, about you said you had a sort of quote-unquote traditional upbringing where there was a specific sort of track. Tell
absolutely.
Us a little bit more about that.
So, you know, a good reason for it, in fairness, I fully understand why, you know, some of my generation, but particularly the generation above me, like my parents' generation, they've seen real poverty in their life. They've seen some real difficult times. And education for that generation was a privilege. It wasn't something that you had as a matter of course. So actually being educated and being in a position to be able to get a good, respectable job that has some status, but also pays you really good money.
Mm.
And where you can do good for your community without necessarily and be paid for it without necessarily having to go out of your way every day to find a way of doing it. All of those things feed into the professions that they think are really, you know, the desired professions that they would look for their children to go into. So good reasons why that generation of parents and some parents now still think that, you know, if you're not doing something like becoming a doctor or becoming a dentist or a engineer or a lawyer, you know, you're not necessarily giving yourself the best chances for you and your family as you go forward.
We've heard from you, Bhupinder, what your kind of your views are. Amar, would you say that that's how your mum has always been when you've been thinking about jobs as you've grown up?
Yeah, I would say mum's kind of always been like that.
Phew.
No, but in terms of, I mean, mum, I would say I was quite lucky in that sense. Mum's probably not as traditional, but definitely not as traditional as her parents, but some parents who are of ethnic minority backgrounds are kind of at the same level that my mum's parents' generations are at. And we see that when I see potential apprentices that are coming into Cisco, for example, and you see that actually some of them have had to work extremely hard just to get to the actual interview process, because not only are they learning everything that everyone else is learning, they're having to battle their families as well at the same time.
Yeah. Amar and I actually get on very, very well as mother and son. You know, we're pretty good friends really as well. You know, that's quite unusual with the massive kind of age gap we have between parents and children. But that's probably the most contentious time that we have had of all the decisions that Amar's made, was about actually going to do an apprenticeship. Because for me, coming from a family where actually education is everything, it really is. It's your route to success. And university is part and parcel of that route. So when Amar said, I don't want to go to university, I was absolutely heartbroken, utterly, utterly heartbroken. And I did everything in my power to convince him otherwise. It was really difficult.
I think it wasn't just that. I think it was the fact that I would say I worked quite hard at school and I got relatively good grades at even A level.
You got really good grades. You know, you're really humble. But I think that made it even harder because I thought you worked so hard. You did really well. why are you not going to go to university?
Yeah, that was the initial conversation is actually you've got these grades and you're not going to go to university with that. But I won't ever really forget what Mum said. Mum said, well, fine, you're going to have to prove me wrong.
I did, absolutely. I'll tell you why, because actually, a generation ago, apprenticeships were really seen as the poorer cousin of going to university, i.e. those people who did apprenticeships were those that were not so academically inclined, much more practically inclined, and anything that required that kind of academic ability was definitely a university degree. So, and I grew up in a generation that believes that, because that is how it was when we left school 30 years ago. Apprenticeships then were pretty much only about trade. And those trades, even if you went into those trades, the ability to be able to go through all the ranks and get to the kind of managerial and directorship areas were very, very limited. The factor that made it a little more palatable at the time, and I would say now I'm a supporter, but at the time made it a little more palatable, was the fact that he would still get a degree.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And I think if you weren't going to get a degree, that would have been hugely more a lot more pressure not to do it.
Sure. So let's rewind back a little bit, because I think I kind of agree with you. When I graduated from university in 2013, so I was thinking about going to university in 2009, and an apprenticeship would never have crossed my mind. I don't know about you, Dev, if that was a similar.
Yeah, I mean it's quite similar to what it's already been said at the table, in that when it came to that concept of apprenticeships, it never really crossed my mind at all. It was more that there's a very traditional route. You go to secondary school, you go to college, and then you go to university. And I heard a little bit about apprenticeships when I was younger and kind of applying for universities, but it's nothing that really crossed my mind, interestingly enough.
And what was the sort of relationship like with your parents and kind of the route that you were on? Were they always kind of similar to what Amma was saying? You know, you're headstrong, you want to do something, they were supportive, or were they kind of nudging you in certain ways as well?
It's definitely the latter. Definitely the latter, yeah. So both my parents were quite traditional in terms of what kind of careers they believed to be successful. So doctor, lawyer, that kind of stuff. And I was getting pushed towards sciences a lot more. And something that you mentioned a little bit before, Bupinder, around that concept of enjoying what you do. And if you don't enjoy it, then you're not going to be good at it. That really showed when I did things like maths at A level, because it wasn't something I enjoyed. And unfortunately, didn't get the greatest grades in it. So I kind of presented my family with, like, look, I'm going to go to university. I want to do computer science. And they didn't really understand what that was. They didn't really understand what was involved with kind of programming, computer science, the architecture around computers and such. So it was very difficult for them to kind of fully process if that was a good idea a lot of the time. And it was kind of a case, it's something that you kind of mentioned a little bit more, it's around trust. And if it wasn't the right career, it would have shown. But because they had that trust in me to say this is a good area to look down, then they were pretty happy with the decision. In the end,
yeah, I think having that from kind of our age perspective to our parents, if you've got that little bit of trust and your parents are prepared to give you a little bit, and if you're going to go into something that you're passionate about, of course you're going to give that 100%, 110%.
Definitely.
So your parents can see that whilst you're going through the process and actually going, you know what, that little bit of trust has gone a really long way, and actually they're enjoying what they're doing. They're doing really well at it and they're being successful at it.
It's not a bad thing. I'll tell you why. Because I think from a parent's point of view, both of you, it sounds like. Sounds like, Deb, you had the same kind of conversations with your parents as I've obviously had with Amma about
Definitely.
It. It does, I think it puts a little challenge in there for young people to say, OK, this is my decision, you know, I wasn't joking when I said you have to prove me wrong, Amma. Mm. Yeah, because actually, for me, that was the gauntlet was laid almost to say, look, I am trusting you to do this now because it isn't what I would want for you and isn't what I think is the right thing. And I think although that adds a bit of pressure, but it also adds a bit of challenge. And
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
I think there's that determination that, you know, I know this is the right thing and I can make it work. Mm. And, you know, and I will make my mum and dad proud that I made the right decision. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an extra part of what helped you.
Yeah, I think that challenge bit, actually, more the more I think about it, the more that's true. Because I remember when I graduated my apprenticeship, I remember I came home that day and I said to Mum, I told you I'd prove you wrong. She was really happy for me, but it was that thing that was always in the back of my mind that she said it at the start of my apprenticeship. And I put my heart and soul into it. Not just to prove you wrong, Mum. It's also, I do like what I do. But that was one of the things that actually, proving to my parents that actually, just because it's different doesn't mean it's wrong.
So let's talk a little bit about choices that are kind of available to people. Because for me personally, you know, my dad's a stonemason. My mum works with him and also does kind of some writing and bits and bobs on the side. But when it came to kind of finishing off school and going into university, for me, it was all about Googling and trying to work out actually what is out there. How do you weigh up all these different choices? So I'm curious as to what your experience was, Amar, in terms of how you came to even discovering apprenticeships and what that sort of thought process was like for you.
Yeah, so like I said, I was the youngest of a lot of cousins that had gone to uni. And I'd always kind of kept up with politics and stuff like that. So during all the election where the Lib Dems said they wouldn't raise student fees, and then the student fees got raised. And actually, that was one of the big factors about looking for other options, because then I think to myself, actually, you've just tripled the price of university, and that's quite a large debt to come out with. So started looking at kind of different options and things that were out there. My now fiance at the time, girlfriend, she was doing a internship with GSK, and actually that was one of the things that was offered to her is they do an apprenticeship and these are some of the things involved, and that was maybe the spark. And it was then I said, actually, let's see what apprenticeships offer. And when they start talking about you do the roles, you gain the work experience that's required as well, and you're getting paid at the same amount of time, not paying to go to university. So instead of starting from a negative, you're actually gaining on what you're starting from zero from. And I actually took some time out, first by myself and then with Mum as well, to look at what the cost is for university as a whole. And weighing up against, actually, I know what apprenticeships are out there. I've Googled them. I've gone on apprenticeships.org. And even after some heated discussions, again, that kind of challenge factor came in. There's one particular discussion with Dad that Mum doesn't know about, where it was quite heated. It was good in the end, because actually that night I was really focused about finding exactly what's out there, what I want to go into. But that kind of challenge of kind of saying, that's where I'm going to go. And our generation, I think, have got it a lot easier than previous generations. Google is out there.
Yeah.
It's so much simpler with Google. You type in apprenticeships or apprenticeships in the sector you want to go into.
Or even just, what do I want to do after school?
I mean, and there's so many options that you can then go and choose from.
But the thing is, parents can look at that too. And that's the other thing of it.
Yeah.
But we have to say, going back to the discussions about how, you know, when he came back and talked to us about the cost of university, it didn't mean anything to me. I wasn't worried about the cost of university, but it meant something to him.
Yeah.
And that was I was kind of saying, well, why are you worrying about it? It's a normal thing, you know. Clearly, for me, it wasn't, because if we went to university at my generation, we didn't pay to go to university. I said, but all the kids have been the same, but why are you worried about having a debt? You know, it won't matter long term, because you'll pay that off. If you go to university, you'll get a job that actually helps pay that off. And it was quite, bearing in mind, his fiance was the one who originally thought about apprenticeships. She went to university.
She didn't
do the apprenticeship. And that's probably because her mum and I, we've known each other quite some time, and her mum and I had a conversation, and we were both of the same mindset, same generation, same mindset, actually kids go to university. So she ended up having to go to university, although that was probably her second choice. She would have preferred to do an apprenticeship.
I think it comes back to this whole thing of, what is it that the individual, shall we say, wants versus the parent? Because I remember having a really heated conversation with my mum. She came with me to all the university open days, and she had gone to Glasgow University. She studied zoology there, and she loved Glasgow University. And, you know, in Scotland, you're either a Glasgow person or an Edinburgh person. My family are Glasgow people. And I was so excited about, you know, I originally was going to go to Glasgow Art School. I was like, I'm going to go to Glasgow Art School, I'm going to go to Glasgow Uni, and then I changed to maths, but I'm still going to go to Glasgow Uni. And I went to the open day, and I was completely disappointed. And I remember coming home and my mum being like, wasn't that amazing? And I was like, no, I didn't like it. I don't want to go there anymore. And I'm going to go to St Andrews or Edinburgh or somewhere. And it was a really difficult conversation, because I could tell she was trying to listen and be like, okay, you have, you know, you do what you want to do. But at the same time, she was like, no, do this. I think this is the right thing for you. And
there's something about heartstrings as well, isn't there? There's something about emotional attachment to certain things and an emotional reaction to sometimes when your kid comes back and says one thing and you're actually, in your heart, you've made your mind up that this is what you see that your child is going to do and go for. And, you know, I think people need to think very carefully.
I find it interesting around the kind of idea of choice and that accessibility to information. You kind of brought it up a little bit before. It's so easy to Google just anything around like what type of job do you want, what's involved, what skills can you attain from it. I guess, Bupender, to you, when Amar kind of presented this idea of having this, how did you kind of further...
Really difficult. I'll tell you why. Because actually, I knew his teachers quite well as well.
He was
a bit of a nerd at school. So, you know, the teachers, I used to go and have a chat with the teachers quite often, and we used to, you know, we got on really well. The teachers weren't pro apprenticeships.
Sure.
They really, really weren't. And that, it was like being in an echo chamber. They were reaffirming what I was saying, that actually, I'm not sure this is a good idea. He's bright, he can go to university. So there's nothing from the school at all that I could... And there was no, there wasn't like, you know, you could go in and talk to them about which university, you can go in and talk to them about courses, you can go in and talk to them about all sorts of things, except apprenticeships. They had very little knowledge about it. So the only thing I had to be able to access for research was the internet. But the internet gives you factual information, and actually you need to talk to somebody.
You need that opinion.
For that emotional buy-in.
Sure.
Because there is an emotional buy-in when your child is doing something other than what you would have expected.
Absolutely.
For that emotional buy-in, you need to be able to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there was anything that we could do going forward around how well apprenticeships can work, is about making sure that educational establishments put an equal level of importance on both university and apprenticeships, and they have the same level of enthusiasm around it, because that's where most parents, because educationally, where else are they supposed to go? Who else are they supposed to talk to?
But it's a kind of difficult one where you've got a bit of a chicken-egg situation, right, where jobs are changing nowadays. You know, what's out there changes even on a sort of 2 to 3 year cycle. So if what you start, you know, what you choose to do after school, the marketplace might already have slightly shifted by the time you graduate. And that was even the case for me. You know, I started mine in 2009. By the time it got to 2013, you know, the sort of jobs that were out there and the sort of ideas around employment were actually quite different from what I'd actually chosen as a degree. So
that's
it's
quite
hard
interesting.
To predict.
Yeah, it's quite interesting you say that, because it's something that the grads at Cisco say quite often, is they've done something like computer science or computer programming, and they actually say it's a 3-year course, but what you learn in your first year is almost actually irrelevant by the time you're graduating.
Exactly.
It's very true.
Because the world moves so quickly and moves so fast in terms of what technologies out there and what jobs are available through those technologies, that actually some of the stuff you learn is so quickly out of date, and we move so quickly almost.
It's also the subject is sometimes not really that important. I mean, I studied maths and I'm now a writer, you know, I think, and podcast host. I certainly don't need any maths for this other than checking the time to make sure we don't go over, you know.
So I guess a question that I had for you, Bupender, is around kind of Amar getting into IT. Obviously, I've come from an IT background. I had to educate my family a lot around the space of IT and what kind of careers and prospects were there. When Amar was kind of getting into IT, what was your immediate reaction? Was it a good choice? Is that something that you knew about?
It's a very confused choice for me, I have to say, and for his dad particularly. His dad was really not in favour of Amar doing anything in the IT world. He was under the impression that the IT world is a saturated world. You know, there is nothing more for you to gain there, and actually you're not going to necessarily be hugely successful. My view is, just don't know anything about it. It is so vast. I mean, when somebody says IT, it could mean anything. And even now, sometimes someone has to explain to me very much in layman's terms what he does.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, you know, when I was Amar's age, when I was 23 years old, the internet was still a concept that was almost alien. You know, we had, at 23, we didn't even have a computer at home.
Wow.
So, you know, so I didn't have a mobile phone at 23 years old. So when people talk to me about IT, I know that it's a vast world, but I didn't know anything about it. And then there's a lot of people that have gone into the IT environment, arena. So my husband was very much, well, there's lots and lots of people who are in the IT world and, you know, you're going to be a very small cog in a very huge industry. And sure, what chance have you got to be successful there? So for him, he kept talking about a saturated industry without really knowing exactly what that the scopes were in there. And I have to say, if somebody, even now, even though he's, you know, a pretty successful apprentice, I still don't know what that means. I mean, I know what he does, but IT can mean answering the phone and saying, yeah, you might want to press this button to make your computer work better. Or it could mean something completely, utterly different. Yeah. How do parents know? How are they supposed to know?
It's a very good point. I find that so fascinating because I feel like my parents were very, very similar. When I presented the idea of IT, they didn't really know. And even when I talked to a lot of my friends about it, like, IT is such a broad area of work. I guess for you, Emma, how did you kind of explain that? How was your thought process around that one?
Me going into IT, I knew there was an area that I wanted to go into, but exactly what I wanted to do, I didn't actually know. So I was quite lucky in the sense that my apprenticeship, I got to do like 16, 17 roles in my first year and see which ones I wanted to do. But it, kind of going through that process and figuring out which one I wanted to do and which role I wanted to do and when I chose to become an SE, actually what that meant and learning that, you have to translate that into what your parents understand.
Could you translate what an SE is?
Oh, sorry, systems engineer. But you have to translate that to kind of what your parents understand and build the vision for them. And
explain how you explained it to Dad.
Yeah, so my dad's a lorry driver and he's done driving all of his life. So when he said to me, he said, what do you actually do? Because he didn't really understand what I did and kind of trying to explain to him, okay, Dad, you've got a road network. The networks that you build in companies aren't too dissimilar. And speaking to him about, okay, so what translates to being a lorry? Okay, so you've kind of got the vehicle that you're using. So your phone or something maybe translates to a lorry or a car. The information inside it is the people, the destination you want to get to, whether it be a server, it's like getting destination to a house. But what do you drive on, Dad? And he says, well, I drive on the road. I said, yeah, but someone had to build that road. Someone had to design those networks, the road networks. And I said, that's a large portion of my job. And he said, when you explain it to me like that, that's how I understand it. But the kind of broadness of IT, I think, for parents and for even for pupils, students, people who are looking like what they're going to do, it's like a huge, massive, broad cloud. They think to themselves, where are we going to go in
IT? But
it's
a virtual world.
Another way of thinking about it, though, is not actually the physical job that you're doing, but the variety of jobs within a sector. So I think this is something that probably the tech industry isn't that great at actually explaining and advertising, that when you say, you know, working in tech or working in IT, that can mean being an engineer. It can mean being a salesperson of the technology. It can be someone who maintains the technology. It can be a project manager who project manages a whole load of builders who are building the technology. There's many, many, many different roles, personalities, skill sets that are needed in an industry. And I think sometimes the understanding when it comes back to the parents is not just what is tech, it's also what can you actually do in that world? Where do you fit in terms of your skill set?
It's not just about the skill set. It's also like, actually, for me, I understand from Umar that there is a career path in the area that he's chosen to go for. That's really important to parents because no parent would want their child in a job where they have got no opportunity to develop either sideways, i.e. through specialisation, etc., or upwards through promotion. So you want to be able to see that there are opportunities for, you know, your child to be able to take advantage of. If you don't understand what they're doing and you don't understand what the structure of what, you know, their particular field is, that's a really hard place for parents to be. And it does mean a bit of a leap of faith because many of us, because we haven't grown up in that industry, don't always understand it, and we have to sit down and have that conversation.
I think sometimes it takes more than just one conversation because we grew up in that environment. There are certain things that are natural to us. There are certain things that we think we assume that our parents will understand because we've been in this world of technology from quite a young age. I wouldn't say we were born directly into it.
Well, no, there is a phrase, if you're born 1991 or after, the internet's your first language. And I was born in 1991.
Yeah.
And it is.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, I, I find it, you know, if you go on a website and you kind of know it's a bit dodgy, and you think, how on earth did people click that link or do that? And it's because we just kind of know.
We just figure it out.
We just know how things work, I guess.
It's that subconscious. Because you've grown up with it, subconsciously, you've learned things that you don't even know you've learned around IT.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have consciously had to learn everything around IT because we've got past that. You know, we were much older when the internet particularly came out. Mm-hmm. We had to physically learn that. It wasn't as subconscious as we grew up understanding it.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. I want to change gears a little bit. We've talked a lot around apprenticeships and universities, and I do want to talk about a few options outside of that. But I'm obviously someone who didn't go to university. You found a different career path through apprenticeships. Do you feel like you almost missed out on anything at university? Do you feel like there was anything that maybe you could have benefited from in university in hindsight?
So it is a different lifestyle going to university, I think. I think that thing of, you know, actually moving out and living on your own and kind of being dependent on yourself and learning all the kind of day-to-day things you have to do, maybe that is something that I missed out on. And obviously a lot of people say that if you do an apprenticeship or don't go to university and go down a different path, you miss out on the social aspect of it. And whilst that's probably true, because, you know, at work we probably don't have as many nights out and there's not student nights and things like that.
Sure.
Those kind of things I thought to myself, and I was convincing myself the other way, is actually whilst I'm missing out on those, what am I gaining as well? Mm. And that did help. That really helped me kind of think to myself, okay, I'm not getting the Freshers Week and the societies and all those kind of things, but actually what am I getting? But the big one, I would say, between kind of apprentices who kind of live at home versus uni students who live out, is for probably a large number of them, a large portion of them, is that kind of sense of independence as well. Because, I mean, there's no one checking up on you and saying, okay, like, you should be home at this time or we need you to do this. I mean, I'm quite lucky in that sense. I didn't really have that from mum, kind of realising that, you know, I'm an adult now and actually you can go and do those things. But not every child has that. And,
sure.
And actually, a lot of people use university as kind of their first exposure to that. And it's such a different environment that they then see, because they've been sheltered in their whole life and a lot of their life has been structured. Whereas when you're at uni, it's either you that's got to make the structure or you live an unstructured life.
Completely.
And that's a decision that they then make.
Depends how you define grown up as well.
Yeah.
Because one form of grown up is sort of socially independent and, you know, doing your own washing, and another form of grown up is having a job. So arguably it's both ways. So I have a question, maybe a slightly controversial question. Are parents doing their children a disservice if they're not clued up in all the options? I'm going to start with you, Bupinder.
Short answer, yes. I think we are. I certainly think that I did my son a disservice, because I had no idea, absolutely none whatsoever. And I probably put more stress on him than I needed to. But that's not from a point of, that's from a point of view of caring. And the only way that you can do your child justice for what they actually want is by knowing and having the information and being able to discuss from a informed point of view with your child, where is it that they want to go, what is it that they want to do, and what is the route that they're going to take. It's no different from doing a journey planner, is it?
See, I would disagree to some extent. I didn't want my mum and dad to already have all the information and kind of be sort of taking me on the journey of saying, well, you've got this option, that option, that option. What I really wanted was for them to listen and to hear me out and to be open to new ideas, different forms of doing things. And
yeah, I think there's a middle ground that parents and their children need to maybe get to as well.
Absolutely.
Like, I know that my mum's a very logical person, that I have to show these are the steps that I'm going to get to and that's how I'm going to be successful. And these are the... And I had someone ask me this question who was at school when I was doing a talk with them. And I said, now it's probably slightly easier because there's more information and there's success stories out there that then you can use as examples to say, you know what, this has been done before and it can be done. It actually can be done. And this is how that person did it. And actually tailoring it to whichever industry they want to go to or job they want to go into. If you've got like someone like Mum who needs to see those steps and actually then has that trust to say, actually, I can see the plan that you're going to get to. I can see the steps of building that up. That makes it a lot easier.
Maybe it's not about doing your child a service if you're not clued up, but maybe it's doing your child a service and your child doing your parents as a service if both of you are not open-minded and trusting in the way that you have the discussions. Because I think putting the burden on parents to learn everything about every career.
It is two ways. I will never know everything because it's not going to be, you know, there are too many things for me to know about what my child, what options are out there for my child. So you've got to have an initial discussion about what they're thinking. And you might have a different point of view. The injustice is when you decide that your point of view is better than theirs.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Without actually listening to what they've got to say and without giving them a chance. Yeah. Because it is really hard. Hearts and minds. I always come back to the hearts and minds. Parents have got to believe that it's going to work for their child. And to do that, they've got to be able to see it. Mm-hmm. You know, like Amra says, if you can't see, there's no role models, there's no success stories that they can share, and you can't see it, it's really hard to believe in it.
So then let me ask this, what more can be done to help parents understand all the options that are out there? But you mentioned sort of success stories, but maybe there'd be some nice small things that can happen, maybe companies can do, maybe
so
whatever.
I think there is some things that we can do to help parents and stuff like that. And I think one of the things that makes it really interesting, and I've done this at two separate schools where we've had parent and pupil open sessions. So where I've been on the stand and they've come together and asked the questions and actually said, okay, so this is what my child is thinking about. What's the pros and cons that you see? And when I start talking to them about, well, I was an apprentice and I was in the position that your child was in, and there are certain steps and there is a lot. I think the kind of holy trinity of that would to be have parents, teachers and pupils all together in the same room having that discussion and kind of hearing those stories of people who've gone and done it and people who really believe in it.
So we've got success stories, we've got the holy trinity of parents, teachers and children all together having discussions. Dev, what do you think? What else can be done?
Yeah, I think it's just a lot around openness and understanding the routes that you can take. We've talked a lot about kind of university and apprenticeships, and there's, again, like you said, Omar, there's so many different routes you can take, and almost downplaying one route over the other is so important not to do. It's not that university is what you need to do, and then if you can't do that, then it's apprenticeships. If you can't do that, it's get a job. There's so many different routes. You can't. Exactly. Yeah. It's almost like subconsciously ranking it, and there's no need to do that, because the minute you do that, you almost feel pressured to do one thing. And because we're in a society at the moment where we can take so many different routes, educating yourself on those different routes and the prospects of those routes. I like the idea of having that kind of that plan, that progression plan. Like if I talked about how I wanted to be a musician when I was a kid, if I just said to my mum, I want to be a musician, it's like, okay, like now what? What's your plan? Where are you going with it kind of thing? You need to understand where you can go with it, how you get into it. And because there's so many different routes, understanding those routes and more importantly, not ranking those routes, I think is so
and
important.
I think that's not just for parents. I think that is a societal thing. Yeah, and I think actually our Department of Education needs to do more to make sure that there isn't an elitism around going to university, which does still exist my view.
It does,
And I think that whole of that Department of Education needs to do that, because teachers are still less reluctant to talk about apprenticeships.
Yeah, I think once you have pupils, parents and teachers that need to be within that understanding of actually what's out there for them and not ranking them in kind of universities this and university that, it's a joint effort between everyone who's around education.
Bhupinder, Amar, Dev, thank you so much for joining us. That was an absolutely thrilling conversation, and I really appreciate being so candid in all of your answers to such a range of questions. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think the first thing that I kind of wanted to reflect on is it's not usual that you hear a parent and a child both talking about an experience that they've both been a part of. And it sounds like, obviously, from Amar's and Bupinder's experience, they're very close, good friends. But at the same time, there's certainly been a lot of difficult conversations that have happened over the course of deciding Amar's future when it comes to his career. And of course, we all know what that feels like. There's a lot of emotional attachment when it comes to deciding what it is that you want for your child. You only want what's best for your child, but being able to detach and trust and ensure that you're having conversations that are open can sometimes be quite difficult, but we all know is the best thing to do when it comes to careers. And at the end of the day, you know, times are changing. Jobs are different now than they were when parents were deciding what they wanted to do. And it's a kind of, I suppose it's that chicken and egg situation where you're wanting to put your child into a position where they're going to be best for the future, but you don't really know what the future holds. So it's very difficult to kind of help guide them on that journey and, I suppose, let them choose for themselves. I think one thing that's come through this discussion that I was hearing throughout was this word openness. It feels like the sort of answer to all of these quite difficult questions around making decisions around careers and career journeys is openness of discussion, openness of ideas around things, and openness to changing the status quo and going along the path that is right for you. At the end of the day, you know, there's so many different things out there to do nowadays, and it really is about working out precisely what's going to work for you from both a personal perspective, a career perspective, an interest perspective, and what your skills are. To support the show, please remember to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, Spotify, or wherever it is that you listen to your favourite podcasts.